I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
My name's Pete Allison.
And I'm Dave Cribb, and we do a podcast called Friends with Friends.
Each week we invite a guest on, ask them to pick their favourite episode of Friends, and then we talk about it in far too much detail.
Basically, if you like the show Friends, and you like it when people take things far too seriously, then you might well like this podcast. Search Great Big Owl on your podcast app of choice, and you'll find Friends with Friends right there.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Warning, this show contains spoilers about The One Show and Matt Baker.
Hello, I'm John Holmes. It's the One Show, the podcast that takes TV's The One Show round the back of the bins behind the kitchens and makes it hand over its lunch money. This is part two of this week's edition, so as ever, if you'd like to go back and listen to part one first in order for any back references and callbacks to work properly, you should go ahead and do that now. We'll wait. Okay, welcome back. Joining me this week to go through The One Show like a weevil in a ship's biscuit, another contemporary reference, and Mark Hines and Laura Grimshaw. While we're on the subject, I know we're flitting around a lot in this episode, but that's fine, we can do that, because we do what we like. So there was another weird dissing thing on the Alfie Beau Michael Ball episode on Wednesday, where Matt tried to distance himself for something that had a bit of a to-do in... sort of in the background,
yeah,
in the production meetings. So they said, Matt said, well, the team have dug out some reviews of a terrible show you did.
Oh, God, yeah, the Kismet reviews.
That's right. And Matt then said, I didn't think it was very fair to show these.
No.
But the guy said it'd be funny. Completely distancing himself from this thing where they then came up with a terrible Guardian review of Beau and Ball.
They'd done something together, hadn't they? And they were just like, Ball is shit and Alfie Beau is crap. And you sort of read that out.
And they read it out.
Do you know, the team earlier on dug out some reviews from Kismet, I think it was, earlier on. I didn't think it was very fair to show these, but they said it'll be funny. So
really? It probably...
Yeah, I mean...
Well, the show was the funniest thing.
Was it?
It was the worst show in the history of the world.
I liked it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a shocker.
Well, The Guardian didn't like it, did
they? No. No one liked it.
This new version is built around an... irredeemably vulgar performance from Michael Ball. I'm not reading that.
You could never have a performance.
King Alfie Ball sounds
almost like an opera singer.
Again, we've had this before where there's been a week where there's obviously a producer who just goes, oh, it'd be hilarious if you just wade in and just neg them and they'll fall in love with you. You know, I don't know what it is.
What they didn't do, and I was sad that they didn't do this, given that they did this to Ball and Beau, they did not read Jack Whitehall's one-star review from The Guardian this week.
I read that.
I read it, yeah. I've got it here.
Oh, so guys, choice phrases.
Anyone in comedy who hasn't read this review, like, for the last five nights before they drop off to sleep? Just, warm feeling.
No 3D personality arises from these by-numbers jokes, nor any sense of an interest in people or the world. Environmentalism is lightly mocked. There's a chirpy Auschwitz punchline and a routine about how to speak to people with a lazy eye. And then there's all those jokes about pooing in the swimming pool, pooing at Chernobyl, farting in front of his ex, farting in a urinal. The Whitehall show is full of crap becomes, by the end, less a matter of opinion and a statement of irrefutable fact.
Wow. Is that like your one show audition tape
a
for if
bit,
you were
yeah.
going to talk
Can
to
I replace Matt, I would quite like to do that.
Yeah, what do you feel about that? You know, what's it like? Do you know what? We've had a conversation. There are a couple of people who appear on the show that I like and you cannot stand. So, like, Rylan is one. But the other one has been Michael Ball.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked Ball and Bow on this.
I really liked them.
Won over.
Yeah.
They were great. They played the game. I noted it. It was like, if you're presenting the one show, the guests you want are Ball and Bow. Yeah. They came on and massively. They nailed it. They were good fun. They laughed at all the terrible jokes.
Well, yes, they did. But hang on a minute. Right at the beginning for the show that was Bell Baker, Ball and Bow.
That sounds like a nursery rhyme from Kent.
Bell Baker, Ball and Bow. So the big introduction for them, and they got one of the ones where they're not sitting on the sofa. They came in from, you know, behind the screens.
Yeah.
And because
they had jugglers because it was the greatest show.
They're touring together, doing arenas, and they were going to sing the greatest show, the song The Greatest Show from The Greatest Showman at the end on the piazza. So a juggler and like someone doing something circusy.
Yeah.
But they came on and Bo, right? And the camera's moving with them and they're coming on. Hey, the crowd are going, juggle. Bo leans over and deliberately nudges the juggler's elbow, right? Which then means he just drops all the balls on national television.
Never done that.
Good to see you. Honestly, it's got the clowns arrived.
Listen, we've got a jam.
And I'm thinking, that bloke must be thinking, you fucking... I told my family I was going to be juggling on the one. My fucking trick is juggling. And I'm doing it on national television. And that bearded fuck comes out and knocks the balls out of my hand. When he's performing at his arena, I am going onto that stage during his rendition of fucking The Wind Beneath My Wings or something. And I'm going to ram one of my balls down his fucking throat.
I wrote down that it reminded me of something that Vladimir Putin would do. There'd be a juggler and he'd push him over because there's no comebacks. Then they started showing dog pictures that they had.
Yeah.
Oh. And Alfie Bo had 10 dogs.
That's
right?
Too many.
10 dogs. And I was like, that's also like something that Vladimir Putin would have. So more and more.
He rides the dogs around his grounds.
I began seeing like Alfie Bo as being quite a menacing character in this. It really appealed to me. They were funny together.
Yeah.
They were really, really good. There was a lovely thing about their pre-show rituals. Mm. So Michael Ball says, I always say I love you. Then I have to say I love you too.
Do you have any pre-show rituals where it helps you relax, where it gets you in the zone?
Michael never has any pre-show rituals.
I'm the worst. He does nothing.
You're on, Michael.
He's just stood back here behind those boards over there and he says, love you.
That's what we have to say. And what do you say back?
Love you too.
And then Michael Ball said, don't be... like that. And he obviously meant, don't be shit, which is a funny pre-show ritual. Don't be shit.
And I won't say the next thing I always say to him, which is, don't be...
And then the last thing they say before they go out. What's the last thing I say before I go out, Alfie?
The last thing that has to be said to me before I go on stage is...
You're smelling nice for the ladies and the gentlemen.
And I have to then smell nice for the ladies and the gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
He borrowed mine.
He borrowed yours.
It's called Febreze.
Magic.
And then they talked about how he wasn't smelling nice today, and so he had to borrow Alfie Bo. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Which was Febreze.
Yeah.
They were just great, a good double act.
And it was really funny. So at this point, obviously, I didn't know that Matt was going to resign at the end of the programme. And I was just going, Matt does not understand how jokes work.
No.
He looks so baffled every time everyone's laughing.
Yeah.
But I now realise it's because he was staring off into the middle distance.
There was a great
rehearsing his little speech.
Yeah. Great bit where Matt said, "Oh, and you're doing arenas like that," and Michael Ball said, "Yeah, like we did 2 years ago." Because Matt had said it like this is all. Oh, look what you're doing now.
You're
like,
off again. I mean, you're going to be on tour, aren't you? This time, and you're doing arenas.
Yeah,
we are.
Oh man, I mean,
ending
you know,
at the O2, I think.
So that feeling for you guys singing there, transferring from theatres, obviously, to huge arenas, which I mean, thousands of dancers. It's fab.
We did it 2 years ago.
No research.
Matt did
two of his classic Partridge moments, the moments where he's been the most Partridge, and they happen without a minute of each other. So the first one he did is, at some point, Alfie Bo pretends to storm off, and Matt, sort of not quite enjoying it, began saying, oh, he's acting now, he's acting now.
Oh, he's acting now, he's acting now.
You know, it seemed very Partridge. And the second thing he said, I got the feeling that he... he doesn't have a problem with people who are gay, but he doesn't like it when people pretend to be gay and he's not sure if they're gay or not, right?
I think that's fair.
He didn't seem to like the fact that Michael Ball, out of the fake album covers they'd mocked up, so their albums are called Together, Together Again and Back Together, and they were like, oh, you could call it Together Forever, the fourth one, and then they had some mocked up ones. One was called Stuck Together, and the two of them were hugging, and Michael Ball's like, I definitely want to keep this one, and you could see Matt sort of going,
Not sure.
What he did is, having sort of got this sort of thing about whether you're not sure if they're lovers, I imagine he thinks it's showbiz people as well. You steer well clear. But he said he had a line that doesn't make any sense unless you believe that he's trying to not look a bit rattled and homophobic. So the line he said to them, they were talking about this Together thing, and he just said, well, don't be shy with your suggestions of togetherness throughout the show.
I love that one. That's my favourite.
Stuck Together.
Well, is that so true to life?
Yeah. Sadly, it is.
Don't be shy with your suggestions of togetherness as we go through the programme as well.
It's absolutely fine. It's absolutely fine.
But I also quite like that Matt went in when said, oh, you can call the fourth one Together Forever. And then they had the mocked up ones. And you feel like Matt suggested it in the meeting and no one laughed and they didn't mock it up. And he's like, I'm fucking saying it on air.
This was the first one. Together. And then we had Together Again.
Yeah. And the looks get more steely, don't they?
Yeah. We've got a beard for that one. Until, and then here are to Back Together.
Back Together. Yeah. Creative genius with the titles, I think. The focus groups, the attention.
Really, yeah.
You've got a good one for...
Well, for number four. Together Forever.
I'm getting my joke in. And then Michael Ball's
like,
oh, I love
that.
It'll get the biggest laugh of the
four. It died in it. I'm resigning.
Glenda Jackson was on as well, wasn't she? So
she was
the other guest.
She looked so tiny next to Ball
and
Bone.
There was one wide shot, right, of the full sort of left. She looked like
be enormous, or she's really tiny. And I couldn't work out, but it was one or the other. They might be... huge. Yeah.
The clip they showed of her in her new BBC drama, she was sitting at a table eating dinner and it looked like a massive scaled up table for a borrower's production. So I think she is genuinely tiny.
Yeah, as I said, I'm no one to talk and I've never stood next to Glenda Jackson, but I sort of want to now. Yeah. But I bet she's taller than me and that would be really annoying.
She was good. I mean, they had this, because her drama's about dementia, they had a 8-minute piece about dementia research before it. And it was one of those perfect things where you just go, this is absolutely fascinating. Fascinating television. Yeah. I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to put the little cursor to get onto the thing.
The thing I liked at the end of that, Matt was obviously a bit giddy and also aware that he didn't want to run out of time for his speech at the end. So he was like rushing everything along. So they had this film and he came off the back of it and introduced Glenda Jackson and there was no punctuation in the sentence at all.
Yeah.
It really made me laugh. So he went, it's amazing and we're so lucky to have the scientists that we have and we must now introduce Glenda Jackson. And she did a little jump like she did when he was like, and now Glenda's getting on the cab. Bye, Glenda. It was so rushed because he's like, I'm doing my speech and I'm not rushing my speech.
God, that's really
rush these
true.
People. Yeah. These aren't important.
He was rattling through. Yeah. He was really doing it to time for once.
Yeah.
I love you. We're so lucky, aren't we, to have the scientists that we do doing all that. So lucky. Incredible work, we really are. We should certainly now welcome Glenda Jackson to the One Show.
Well, good story about Glenda Jackson. I didn't realise the story when she used to work in Boots, the chemist. So there's one of my learning moments of the week. And she had this great story about how she wanted to do drama. So she wrote, as just somebody who works in Boots, to RADA, because it was the only drama school she'd heard of. They got her in for an audition and said, you were brilliant. You are brilliant. If we had scholarships, you'd definitely be in. But we don't. So off she went, thinking, well, that's the end of that. But her manager at Boots wrote to the local council, Chester Council, and got them to pay for her to go to RADA.
Mm.
And as she herself said, you think, that would not happen now.
No, not at all.
If you worked in Boots and you went to your manager and said, can I have an afternoon off to go and audition for RADA? And came back and went, well, he wouldn't let you, but come back and just go, is there a way you could help me leave Boots and get into RADA? I mean, they would literally go, fuck off.
But not only that.
Because the meal deal fridge needs restocking.
Not only that, the council, I imagine that that council, if anyone has heard this story, they are just going through and going, well, she can repay that now because she's got independent means. Yeah. We've means tested Glenda Jackson. We want that scholarship money back. That should not have come to you. She's remarkable. I love the fact that she's like the only, you win an Oscar and you go, what's next? And you go, I'll become an MP. Yeah. I think she's really remarkable.
Yeah. I did like that Matt asked her, how has it been being back on the telly? And that's just, what was it like?
Yeah, absolutely.
And this, Glenda, marks your return to the small screen for 25 years. So how has it been, the process of returning? And
I like the fact she went in as well immediately to go, the changes in lens technology have been... All right, that's not quite what I was hoping for, but... You
know. How has it been, the process of returning? And obviously very different technology and what have you.
That was the most amazing thing, the technological changes, because now everything comes... These vastly different lenses arrive in a big box and slot into the machine.
And who's Len? The secret quiz. I know we've touched upon it, but we've got to talk about the secret quiz. So last week, Mark, you talked about this. It was an episode I hadn't seen where they'd rigged cameras in taxis somewhere in Britain, and the taxi driver then has to ask a series of questions. And if they get the questions right, they don't pay a fare, they don't know they're being filmed, then they have to sign a release form. God only knows the people who refuse to sign the release form. I'd like to see that footage. But this week, because last week I hadn't seen it, so I was under the impression that the taxi driver had to sort of throw this stuff into conversation. Last week's was simply the best about Tina Turner. What's the next line? This guy this week just treated the whole thing like he was a TV quizmaster.
Yeah, he did.
There was no artifice at all.
Glenda Jackson, she's coming back on TV with a new drama back in the day. She's won a couple of Academy Awards. What's the other name for the Academy Awards?
Like the BAFTAs or something.
Not the BAFTAs.
This is very much why they've clearly put this one out second.
Yeah.
Having established that the first one, the woman did really well, they're now like, well, we've recorded four of them, but, you know, we'll have to just hope that people get it next time round.
You get in a taxi. Imagine that. You get in a taxi. The taxi driver is driving you to wherever you want to go. This time in Manchester. And he just starts chatting, but not in the way taxi drivers chat. He just goes... Glenda Jackson's won a couple of Academy Awards. What's the other name for the Academy Awards?
Mental, isn't it?
The people in the back are going, what?
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. If I got in a cab and that happened, I would fucking love it. I would love that. I feel like, you know, all the situations where you're trapped into having a conversation with someone you don't know. So like hairdressers, taxis. They should just do quizzes. That's it. I don't want small talk. They're really, I don't want to talk about my life with a stranger. Just do quizzes.
There was for years, it must have been the late 90s, early 2000s, there was actually a sort of quiz show cab in America that used to go around. If you got in, you just happened to flag it down. You'd get in and they'd be like, you're in the quiz show cab. And people would go bananas.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to Bathurst and Dundas.
I got it, bud.
No, Bathurst and Bloor.
That's all right.
No, sorry.
Thanks.
Dundas.
That's all the same. Thank you.
Okay.
So you're going to Dundas and Bathurst.
Yep.
Yes.
Bathurst and Bloor.
Bathurst and Dundas.
Bloor and Dundas.
There you go.
This is that show!
Oh my god!
Oh my gosh, I never thought I'd ever be on this show before.
If you did get on it, am I gonna kill it? Am I gonna rock it? What's gonna happen?
Well, we're gonna try and rock it, I suppose.
We're gonna do our best. We're gonna kill it.
What do you say? You wanna play this game?
Yeah, let's do this.
It's like, this is incredible. Hang on, they've started doing it on trains. So I got a train from London to Manchester a couple of weeks ago, right? And I'm sitting there minding my own business and the food I'd bought before I got on the train. And the guard comes on, he says, ladies and gentlemen, it's Dave the Guard, and time now for Dave the Guard's train quiz.
Oh my God, you're going to be on the one show.
The whole carriage was like, what? And he said, so if you get the answer to this question right, then come to the buffet car and we'll give you a sandwich. And I was like, I'm not doing it. But I'm not engaging with this. I carried on doing that. But I found myself, of course, engaging with him.
Yeah. Impossible
just
not to.
Just going, oh, I know the answer. Shall I go to the buffet car and get a sandwich? I know the answer. Really weird, though. I'm like, no one asked for this.
No.
But it seemed quite popular. People going, settling back. Let's have a go at the quiz.
Why is it then it's popular on a train? train when it's not being filmed. And when it's being filmed in a taxi, yeah, it's not very popular.
So my favourite answer, though, favourite question, favourite answer, was when, again, like a quiz master, not a taxi driver, so no pretense at all. He just went, the comedy duo who sang Bring Me Sunshine, who are they? And this guy in the back just went, oh, was it Alas Smith and Jones?
Michael Ball and Alfie Bell have got a lovely version of Bring Me Sunshine. What was the name of the comedy duo who used to sing that particular song on their show? Bring me sunshine, bring me
joy.
Let's meet the Jones. That's,
no, wasn't them.
Of all the comedy duos,
you're absolutely right about
that. Famous jazz hands duo.
The way that he went into it was great. So I thought you were going to say it was the one where he just went, so this week, Jersey's 50. But do you remember the song he done? How many problems did he have in that
they were
song?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I bet you didn't know that Jay-Z is turning 50 this week. Yeah. Now, he came out with a song where he had lots of problems. How many problems did he have?
One.
Not quite.
And four people just going, that's 99, it says 99 problems, yeah.
So, and that, again, those were the ones they could screen. Oh, I mean, imagine.
Trump's addressing NATO was the other intro. he said, Donald Trump's addressing NATO, but what's the name of his car that the president drives around?
You know who's in the UK this week? Donald Trump. He's attending a NATO conference.
Well, lucky you.
You know the name of the massive car that he drives in?
I have no idea.
No idea.
And it's called the Beast. Yes. That was the actual answer. But he had a thing of going, I'm going to give someone a hint as to what it is.
Yes.
And his hint made no sense, but the woman got it right. So he went, what do you call your husband when he's had one too many pints? And she went, Beast. And he went, that's it. And she went, oh, is it? Beast.
It's what you call him when he's had a pint too much.
Beast. Is that what it's called?
It's called the Beast.
The coincidence of her calling her husband a beast when he's pissed.
And him, and the taxi driver, somehow knowing.
I am now starting to wonder if she was his wife.
But the funny thing about it is...
I call him the rapey beast when he comes home. He comes home all drunk on Stella. Right. Is that the answer? Is Donald Trump's car called the rapey beast?
Yeah, I mean...
So yes, it is, yeah.
Outside the realms of possibility.
Heavy Pencil, a new comedy from Great Big Owl, the people who brought you Brian and Roger.
Are you a client?
Yes, I'm a client. I'm the actor Michael Cork.
The Observer called it a lovely thing, wonderfully funny, pitched perfectly, produced with a light touch.
No, I've been taken on as Fliss's assistant.
You're the assistant's assistant.
Yes, if you like.
Heavy Pencil by Anna Crilly and Tony Gardner.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I am still very, very interested in Jack Whitehall. He had a pretty much the whole half hour.
Yeah, it was
sitting there and doing it. Angelica asked one of my favourite questions of all time, which comprised about 9 questions. So she said, this is one single question. You're doing your stand-up. What's the theme? Where are you going? You start in November, but you're off to Leeds tomorrow, but you're all over the country, aren't you?
OK, Jack, let's talk about Stood Up, your third tour, which is going very well. And what's the theme? Where are you going? You started in November, but you're off to Leeds tomorrow, but you're all over the country, aren't you?
Well, yeah, all over the country.
One question. Amazing. But he mentioned that his show ends with a big musical number, his stand-up thing. Yeah. And he sort of said, oh, it was, you know, I got Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice to help me out with.
I have a big, ridiculous musical number that I end the show with. And we've got, I got Andrew Lloyd Webber, sorry, Lord Lloyd Webber, and Sir Tim Rice helped me come up with this musical number for
you,
the end.
What, so you just rang them up and just said, hey, guys?
Yeah, kind of. I wrote to them and I was like, I have this mad idea. Would you be part of the kind of sketch before it? And they both said that they were up for it. So I went and travelled and filmed some stuff with them.
Throws that away. Oh,
didn't it?
Poor Jack Whitehall can't get the breaks.
Turns out that Tim Rice is still married to a woman called Jane McIntosh, although they separated but never legally got divorced.
Yeah.
Well, Jane McIntosh was the first wife of Jack Whitehall's father, Michael.
My God.
You probably know that Jane McIntosh and Tim Rice's relationship fizzled out in the 80s when it was revealed he'd been having an affair with the singer Elaine Page. But since then, Jane McIntosh has won awards for her conservation work with the Red Squirrels.
Well, that'll be a film on next week's One Show, though, won't it?
And Angelica Bell also did a lovely line, which is, I love it when people come in and I think it's that slightly misjudged thing where they go, because he's a comedian, we can really take the piss with some sick bants.
Yeah.
And our bants will always be, you're shit. And you have to sort of go, oh, thank you, I don't know what he's saying here. But she had a bit where she just said, that musical number, she said, that's really fun for the audience, because usually when you go to see stand-up, you're just seeing someone standing on stage doing their thing, but you really want to put loads of effort into it.
Which is really fun, though, for the audience, because usually when you go to see stand-up, you're just seeing someone standing on stage doing their thing, but you really want to put lots of effort into it, you know. And
it's that idea that stand-up is, it's boring, isn't it? They just stand there and they don't put the effort
it's
in.
It's just talking.
Well, they
just
talking also stupid thoughts.
Yeah. Not even writing it. They're just saying whatever's in their head.
Yes, right.
No work goes into it.
Although that's podcasting.
By the way, did Pippa Evans used to be married to a relative of Jack? Because Pippa Evans, who we all know and love, and is coming on this podcast, by the way, in next year. We've already booked her in.
See how this next section goes.
Hi, Pippa. She got a shout out, though, for helping, I'm guessing, completely writing on her own.
I think he did actually say,
she wrote the song for the end of Jack Whitehall's show. So shout out to Pippa Evans on the One Show.
This amazing lady called Pippa Evans actually wrote the ending for me, and it's this big, mad, musical spectacular inspired by the Nativity.
But I think more than that, I think the only time a name stand-up has gone on British television and acknowledged that part of their act is written by someone else.
Yeah.
That to me, I mean, maybe just Jack Whitehall didn't think it through. But well done.
Yeah.
I was really pleased to see that.
But what this basically means is that Jack Whitehall was involved and Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice and Pippa Evans, and it's still only got a 1-star in The Guardian.
But, I mean, the reality is, of course, is if you gave Pippa Evans the chance to do her own stuff, it would be brilliant. She's writing to spec here.
5 stars in The Guardian. And an Olivier Award, I believe, Pippa Evans. Yeah. So that song at the end of Jack Whitehall's show, so there was a really odd bit when they were talking about the big number at the end, and he said, oh, well, I can't tell you, it would spoil it. And there was a whole convoluted thing, because it was all to do with Michaela Strachan, who he fancied as a kid because he went to see her in Peter Pan. And then they had a video of Michaela Strachan in Cape Town saying hello to Jack Whitehall.
Which they cut off while she was still speaking. Like, we've got what we wanted.
We've got a special message from Michaela for you. Jack, take a look.
Hi, Jack. Well, I am very flattered to know that I was your childhood crush, and I'm very sorry that I'm not in the studio to meet you in person. I'm actually, as you can see, in sunnier climes. I'm in Cape Town. So here's an open invitation for you to pop over and I'll take you bird watching.
she invited him to go bird watching with her in South Africa because poor Jack Whitehall can't get the breaks.
Yeah, so that was weird. And then, but the whole him having a sort of crush on Michaela Strachan was a bit sinister. Mm. And then he said, at the end of my show, I fly. He said, oh, but I don't want to give it away. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't
want to give it away. I've ruined the end of my show.
I shouldn't have said that on national television. But while I'm here, I do fly at the end. And I do make my legs do that thing like Peter Pan that I got from Michaela Strachan.
Because in my show, at the end, I don't want to ruin the surprise, but I fly. I fly at the end of the show as the emu. I've given away the ending. But spoiler alert, I fly.
But, oh, no, I didn't mean to say any of that. And to prove that that was all off the cuff, they brought up a photograph of that exact scene from his stand-up show.
Oh, no, you've accidentally shown the picture I gave you.
Exactly.
Oh,
you're just this is so rude.
I would say one thing I did notice this week is they'd done quite a lot of research. The researchers on this week had actually dug up quite a lot of things. So even things like that Michael Ball, Alfie Beau review that was bad, you were like, I didn't really know about that, which in itself is really unfair that they did it. I've never heard of it. And they're like, oh, look at this shitty old review. But the Giles Brandreth bit with Jack Whitehall, that is well worked.
But you famously were commissioned to produce a piece of art as well.
Famously. Yeah. I used to do portraits. Yeah, I went to art school and I did portraits when I was younger.
Of cats as well?
I was once commissioned to paint Giles Brandreth's wife's cat.
Yeah.
And she insisted on me doing sittings with the cat. So I went out to their house and did three sittings with their cat. And
Jack,
their cat.
We have spent a lot of time on this and we've actually found the cat, we've tracked the picture down, and the man himself. Come on in, Giles.
Even someone's gone through enough of a packet to read a thing about Jack Whitehall. He went to art school and then he painted Giles Brandreth's cat.
Yeah.
And I know if you work at the One Show, you've got Giles's number on speed dial.
Yeah, I mean, he's
and
on there every day.
It's not difficult, you know. But the fact that
they'd
actually
act shocked as well when he came on, it's like, is it a shock that Giles Brandreth is on the One Show? Is that surprising?
It is a shock he's still on the One Show, but he's you know, he seems like a really nice guy. We've talked about him before on the show about how we actually sort of really warmed to him, especially when he was killing all those old ladies. But they brought out the picture that Jack Whitehall had painted of Giles Brandreth's cat when he was at the start of his career. And he'd been paid to do it. Giles Brandreth is funny because he said, my wife gifted you that as a present because that stops it being liable for tax.
And this was done, this is some of your earliest work.
Some of my earliest work, yeah.
My wife, I checked today. Yeah, she paid you £100.
£100? You know,
but she gave it to you as a present, so there's no tax liability.
It's not worth that.
But again, when they had to get to that bit, I think Angelica Bell or Gethin Jones had been like, how much did you get paid for that?
That's really
good. Did you pay for this?
We paid good money.
And how much did you pay for it?
Well, if Gethin Jones is just going to be negging people and demanding to know their salary, I am all for him getting this job.
Because they both kind of asked it at the same time when Giles Brandreth said that. But one of them did sort of say, oh, how much did you get paid? And one of them did say, did you pay for that?
Yeah.
In a slightly shocked way.
This is Gethin, though, who wants the job. You know what's happened? He's going, if I get this gig, I'll get the same money as Matt Baker. And we know that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But they've got Gethin, £100, do the One Show. So now he's obsessed with how much everyone else is getting. It was odd going in. He made it sound, you're talking about the research, it made it sound, though, that they'd done far more research than they had, I thought, Gethin. Because he was going, well, we managed to track down the picture. We managed to track down Giles. They haven't tracked him down. He's just, is it just in the next room?
They were just chatting and they said, oh, Jack Whitehall's on next week. And he went, oh, he painted my cat.
Exactly.
That's true. Jack Whitehall, actually, before he was a stand-up, he was actually a book illustrator. I noticed there's a book written by Michael Whitehall about his time being an agent that's illustrated by Jack.
So, interesting.
Yeah,
well,
I wonder if he's any relation, because they've got the same name, haven't they? It's interesting.
He's got the same name as his father, and the man has lived the same life as Jack Whitehall's
father as well.
And Jack is in the book because he's born to the man because it's his father.
And it's funny you mention being born there, because Giles Brandreth did mention on the sofa, didn't he? He said, well, actually, I've known you, Jack, since before you were born.
And there was,
because your dad, I think, used to be probably Giles Brandreth's agent or something.
Yeah. We've known Jack since before he was born.
That question Angelica Bell asked, which she just said, I mean, it's beautiful that you want to be with your dad. And then Gethin came in with a thing about going, it just makes money, doesn't it? And then Angelica came out of that with, but a lot of people think he's not actually your father.
Do you know what a lot of people love is the relationship with your father, Michael. It's beautiful that, you know, that you want to be with him and you what are you laughing for?
I think it just makes money, really, isn't it?
No, it's so cynical. But a lot of people think that he's not actually your father.
And I actually Googled this. Is Jack Whitehall's dad real? And there is zero stuff on the internet where people are asking that. So it's just a mad thing where Angelica Bell's like, is it an actor?
Yeah.
And she's gone, that's a good question.
No one said
that. What was, again, brilliant is that Jack Whitehall said, no, he isn't. My real dad's Nigel Havers.
I knew Nigel Havers was my dad.
And that's even funnier when you know that Jack Whitehall's dad, Michael Whitehall, and Nigel Havers had their own film company together. So it's just every name that comes up in this thing is basically someone who has given Jack Whitehall some help.
I'm really enjoying this family tree you've got.
Oh, yeah, it goes all the way to the top.
It's all over the wall.
Can we talk about Angelica Bell's pronunciation of weatherman?
Coming up tonight, he's the BBC weatherman who keeps getting into trouble.
Weatherman?
Weatherman.
Yeah,
weatherman.
There was a couple. There was weatherman and there was also Lemiz, which kept being said. Lemiz. Lemiz.
Tonight's guests have just wowed the West End with Lemiz.
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 Lemiz. Lemiz. Yeah. I paid money to see that.
Also on that bit.
Weatherman.
Weatherman. Weatherman. Is a leatherman, is that the sort of like multi-tool?
Multi-tool, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we don't call that a leather man. Well, that's an entirely
many ways,
different thing.
Given his skill of painting and weather, I suppose Thomas Schaffernacker is a multi-tool.
Yeah. I like the fact as well that he's got a name, Schaffernacker. It's quite a sort of Germanic-sounding name. You think he'd be able to manage the word Spielberg, wouldn't you?
There are so many degrees of detail that you can go into. You can go into something that's like literally looks like a photograph, like Spielberg. I mean, that took a couple of months, maybe 3 months of labour.
Yeah.
But he did. He called him Spielberg. Yeah. Well, oh, dog whistle. Man, oh, man.
But weatherman, just, I couldn't get over. She said it at the beginning, then she said it again, and now here he is, you're a weatherman. Yeah. It's weatherman. It's weatherman.
But were they just saying it over and over again? Because when, so this sort of started this art thing, and it was completely usurped by the whole Jack Whitehall, Giles Brandreth thing. So they had Thomas Schaffernacker on, and they had a little thing about him, and they had all his art in the studio, but they didn't really talk
to
him.
No, they didn't.
Which, by the way,
but Jack Whitehall's here, and he did painting.
Schaffernacker's art is bloody amazing.
I know, it's incredible.
How much spare time do weathermen get, right? Because I was looking at that and I was thinking, when I've worked for the BBC, when I've worked for commercial TV and radio, I don't have suddenly 9 hours in the rest of the day where I sort of go, oh, I'm going to paint something out of a magazine.
22 hours to paint Brad Haley.
I pissed myself laughing when he was like, I'm going to do a portrait of someone. Yeah. And amazing. He chose Fran Healy of Travis.
I like to paint or draw people I admire or simply people with facial expressions I find interesting. It can take a while before I pick the right medium. Today, I'm going to be starting work on a new picture. I'm going to paint Fran Healy, the lead singer of Scottish band Travis.
And then I was like, rain, weather, I get it.
But I did think...
But it took me a while. I was like, what are they doing?
It's an amazing combination of up until that point, I was like... A bit of art, that's all right. The weatherman stuff, I can leave.
Weatherman.
When they bring in Fran Healy from Travis, I'm just like, do you know what? I'm out. It's too much.
It was kind of a spectacle of... Because here's pictures. So the ones they showed, and they filmed this in Thomas Schaffernacker's house.
Mm.
And in the background was this amazing photorealistic drawing he'd done of Harrison Ford from Blade Runner. And he'd got one of Will Smith.
Judi Dench.
Absolutely... photorealism, like the best I've ever seen. Absolutely incredible, right? I had no idea Schaffernacker had this skill, right? So I'm quite impressed with that. And then you think, what of all the people that he could draw? You know, and then you suddenly got this complete one-show spectacle of the BBC weatherman Thomas Schaffernacker and Fran Healy, the lead singer of Travis, and his song Why Does It Always Rain On Me, where he just paints a picture of him in his house. And if it wasn't, if it was anywhere but the one show, you'd go, I've gone fucking mad. But because it's the one show, I just went, oh, okay. I once got very told off on BBC Six Music back when I was on BBC Six. And you'll appreciate this as Laura, as a BBC producer, because you'd have told me off for the same thing.
Yep.
And we were talking about the time that Travis played Glastonbury and sang Why Does It Always Rain On Me? And it started to rain.
Mm.
And the crowd thought that was a wonderful thing. And I said, it's a good job they didn't do a cover of Jizz Lobber.
Yes, I would have told you. Yeah, I'd have laughed, but I would have told you.
My producer did make a face.
Is there a genuine song called Jizz Lobber?
Yes.
There is.
Yes.
That, why on earth were you told off? Why on earth were you told off?
Yeah.
Who did that?
Jizz Lobber was by...
Bow and Ball.
Oh, On the piazza. Please welcome singing audio slaves jizzlobber. Now, I want to talk about their song on the piazza, actually.
Yeah.
Was it audio slave? I don't know. Can't remember. Anyway. On the and there's me slagging off Lauren Laverne for not remembering something last week. She tweeted us this week, by the way. Did you see Lauren's tweet?
That was right. Before we released the episode,
where I had to go for not knowing the difference between Foreigner and Survivor. Anyway, we'll gloss over it. Come on the podcast, Lauren. So I thought this is going to be shit. This the Greatest Showman song on the piazza.
Yeah,
they nailed it.
Oh, do you think so?
I liked it. I loved it.
They were bellowing.
Absolutely. But if they'd done it. Anything less, it would have been wrong. Everybody was going for it.
I loved it. I joined in.
It's fire, it's freedom, it's blood and open. It's a preacher in the pulpit and you'll find devotion. Stop the breaking at the brink of everyone. It's all in all that you know. So tell me, do you want to go? Where it's covered in all the colored lights. Where the runaways are running the night. Impossible comes true. It's taking over you.
I loved it.
They were like two obelixes singing musicals. I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
I thought everything about them was brilliant. I thought they were brilliant guests. I thought they were brilliant at the end. But I've got a theory with them ending the show with that.
Yeah.
I feel like Matt talks about the one show as being the greatest show when he requested it. I think it was his thing.
I thought that as well. And I wrote down, so hang on, is this backfiring though? Because it's basically, I'm quitting. And they're going, this is now the greatest show!
And it opens with the line, so he sort of goes, so I'm quitting, so, you know, thank you. And then it cuts to the bowl just going, ladies and gentlemen, this is the moment you've been waiting for.
Thank you, everybody, for the most wonderful, random 9 years that you could ever wish to experience. Have a great Christmas, and we're going to leave you now with Michael and Alfie performing The Greatest Show. See you later.
Ladies and gents, this is the moment you've waited for.
Yes, Paul.
I think that's a crew dig. I think the crew did that. They said, we're going to come on and we're going to do The Wind Beneath My Wings. No, you're not. No, we've got bigger ideas for you. Come on. Well, no, it was a fitting tribute.
Fitting tribute by two great big bellowing men. It's how everyone wants to go out.
So, any other business, Laura? Any other business?
Well, I wanted to talk about Bing Crosby's daughter on Monday.
Mary Crosby.
Now, so the thing I learned, and I've realised that it's a thing I've learnt and everybody else knew it. This is like the fucking Michelin man, Michelin star thing that also happened in my life recently where I found out that they were related.
It's why he's so fat.
You've got tires and fine dining. They shouldn't be related. But anyway, I did not know that she was Kristen in Dallas.
Who shot JR?
Shot JR. Bing Crosby's daughter shot JR.
I hadn't put two and two together either.
I had no idea.
It was you, Kristen, who shot JR.
Oh. Well, I never did.
This is news to me. I've never heard this before.
So since I watched that, I was like, what?
Yeah,
and
then I did a big what.
Everyone I knew that.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't.
I was just kind of like, but that's a great fact.
So, yeah, who shot JR was an enormous thing back in
1980.
You know, everyone talked about it at the time, and it was a huge industry, wasn't it? There was casting, because in fact, Frank Skinner started talking about mugs that people had with Who Shot JR.
Yeah.
And I remember the character of Kristen doing it, but I too was going, that was Bing Crosby's daughter.
That was Bing Crosby's daughter.
And I didn't even twig when they showed the clip. So they showed a clip of it. And
I was like, why are they showing
Dallas in 1980? And then they showed Kristen shooting it. I'm going, what's that about?
So even then, I still had to Google it because I was going, what is happening? I'm learning something and I don't believe it. And I still had to look it up.
Absolutely. Bing Crosby's daughter was on because Bing's got a Christmas album out. He's long dead. with the Philharmonic Orchestra. And she was on to talk about his legacy and all that kind of stuff.
That sounds like a piece of pub trivia that everyone would know.
I know. I had no idea. No. And that seems like the sort of thing I should know. Well, I'm getting to a point where I just keep finding out things that everybody else knows.
What you didn't know, Laura, is actually this is the one show podcast. and your ride is now free. they got into that. There was this week's Handbrake Turn, or one of the Handbrake Turns for me, was, I don't think it was the dullest film of the week. I think that's either the Alzheimer's film.
Yeah, it was. It's very worthy work, but it just didn't seem like you wanted to sit through that.
Or it might have been the one where they were just after they'd talked about the cat picture that Jack Whitehall had done. And then had to sort of, they were chatting. You remember last week when they were trying to move on and you got Rod Stewart and his mate Mike Darbo chatting about whether he moved to Gloucester or not, just loudly in the background. There was another one of those where you'd got Brandreth and Whitehall and Thomas Schaffernagger having a chat and they were going, ha, 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 cat pigeons, ha, 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 your family's so well connected and white, Jack Whitehall. Meanwhile, they're sort of trying to get into a film about disabled access in hotels.
Yeah.
Listen, you're not going to have a little art session here. We're going to carry on. Now, Corrie star Shirley Houston hit the headlines recently with a series of tweets. She'd been asked if she minded being lifted up a flight of steps at a hotel in order to gain access to her wheelchair accessible room.
Yeah, so that was a bit awkward.
That was a very watchdoggy type of film.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't mind it at all, but
again, it had a valid point, but it always just don't quite fit because it's all jolly, and then it's like, oh, and this is a serious thing.
Yeah,
but the oddest film might have been the fact that it was Cyber Monday. Mm. This was on Monday, right? And they said, oh, it's Cyber Monday, isn't it? Everyone's buying electrical goods because there was Black Friday before that, and
people at home, you would have loved where that joke went, but unfortunately, you just heard that long noise.
That's right. You literally haven't heard that. That's fine. But then they went into a film on the high street presented by the former deputy chairman and managing director of John Lewis and Waitrose.
Right.
About electrical goods on the high street. It was, I mean, I don't know what it was about. It was too dull. But the Handbrake Turn was then simply to get to the JR bit. They came out and then they said...
Quite right.
Now, if you owned a telly back in 1980, then no doubt you would have watched this moment.
There's no doubt you would have watched this. Yeah. And that's when they showed the clip of JR.
I mean, they basically could have just gone, we're on the telly now. And another thing that was on the telly was you, wasn't it?
That was a film. Other things have been filmed, including this.
Yes. When they were talking to Mary Crosby about and they had a clip of her singing with her dad when she was a kid, and she sort of came out of it sort of cringing and going, oh, I clearly didn't inherit his voice.
Yeah.
And I really like that that they both kind of went, oh, like the presenters went, oh, no, don't be silly. It was the most insincere thing I've ever heard.
If Geoffin Jones was on, he'd have been like, did you inherit the money?
But then they started talking about the fact that White Christmas has never been a number one, but Frank Skinner was on the sofa and he's had a number one.
Right.
And I loved what Mary Crosby said because they started talking about the fact that Frank had a number one and she went, oh, I've heard your number one. And he sort of looked shocked and she went, I Googled you to try and find out. I Googled you and heard your song.
In fact, I heard your number one today trying
Did
to...
You?
Yes,
Wow.
I Googled you. And so I heard your masterpiece and loved it.
Thank you. I can't sing like Bing.
No.
I
can't either. No. Clearly you had a good time.
It was so lovely. To try and find out... The song.
She must have listened to that as well and just gone, this is appalling.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like, you know, a football mascot song, isn't it? And if you're an American, you're like, I'm not interested in the sport, the song is not good and I don't know who it is. Lost a lot of that.
I should Google him to try and find out who he is. Oh, no, wait, not that.
Bing, and the Crosby is gone.
So when she was talking about Dallas and she was getting very excited, but obviously they were right at the end of the show and there was just basically a bit where they kind of went, shut up, Mary. And then Angelica was like, I'll be back tomorrow with Geoffin Jones. Matt's fucking face when she said it. I actually took a screenshot of it because it made me laugh so much.
Oh, really?
Show us. Prepared.
She's such a producer.
I know, right?
Yeah, it's really, really what the show's been crying out for.
This is while she's Angelica is saying, I'll be back tomorrow with Geoffin Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to try and show you both at the same time.
Oh, sucking his lips, isn't he?
Look at that.
That was the face he made.
Do you think, like, when Matt does leave in the spring, okay, he will just sit at home, not putting the kids to bed, and just watch every episode of The One Show with that cat's ass? Cat's ass mouth.
John,
I don't want to upset you, John, but we're already in negotiations for him to take over from you.
And there we must end it on the sad, sad note that Matthew James Baker, 2011 to 2019, has announced he's leaving The One Show to vacate the green sofa for another wet presenting sap's arse. Like you, we can't wait to find out who that is. Pick me, pick me. But why not write to The One Show and suggest me? Me, I want to do it for the job. What harm can that do? Matt is back after Christmas until spring, however, and we'll be here too to give him the send-off he deserves. But while you're looking forward to all that, why not rate and review The One Show show on iTunes? And you could go to podbiblemag.com to vote for us in the People's Choice section of their awards. As I said before, we're not good enough to get nominated by them on our own, so we need your help to make them at least be aware that we exist. You could probably also vote for Mark's wrestling one.
It's excellent.
Shut up. Podbiblemag.com and The One Show show. Put that into the People's Choice voting bit. You are a people, and you have a choice. So choose the One Show show, and we promise to cut taxes and deliver Brexit. But while you're remembering to do that, also remember this, and remember it well. When you look at the television to look at the One Show also looks back into you. Goodbye.
Hello, I'm Chris England, and I'm here to tell you about the Fun Factory podcast, available now on Great Big Owl. Each time, I will be reading a couple of chapters of my novel, The Fun Factory, a historical comedy about the history of comedy. So it will kind of be like a free audiobook, which you can listen to at the gym, or jogging, or at your desk while pretending to do your job, or on the train, without the embarrassment of people seeing you actually reading a book like some kind of swot.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.